Great. Thank you all for coming this afternoon. I'm Chris Markham from the University of Texas School of Public Health in Houston, Texas, and I'm happy to be presenting to you behavioral and psychosocial outcomes from two sexual health education programs that we developed for middle school students in Houston, Texas. And this is a project that was conducted by a team at the University of Texas Prevention Research Center, and it's funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And we were very fortunate, Leah Robin at the Division of Adolescent and School Health was our technical advisor. Neither myself nor any of my colleagues have any relationships to disclose. So what do we know about middle school students and sex? From the Middle School Youth Risk Behavior Surveillance Survey, which is a survey conducted in selected states and cities in the U.S., we know that on average, between about 15 and 20% of seventh graders have ever had sex. And that's cause for concern, because we know the younger people are when they start having sex, in particular before age 14, the more likely they are to accrue multiple lifetime partners, the less likely they are to use condoms and contraception, all of which puts them at greater risk for STIs and unintended pregnancy. So developing effective programs at the middle school level is really key. We also know that major legislative initiatives have funded both abstinence education and comprehensive sexuality education programs. However, the efficacy of both of these types of programs has been debated. So the purpose of this study was to develop two parallel programs. One was a risk avoidance program, or an abstinence until marriage program, and a risk reduction program, or an abstinence plus program, for middle school students that were comparable in terms of duration, delivery, and theory base. So what we wanted to do was to design a study where we could really control a lot of the noise. If the two programs had the same number of lessons, were delivered in the same way, we could really focus in on what are the key messages in each of these approaches and the type of activity that are in those approaches, and how do those resonate with young people? And how do they resonate with different subgroups of youth? So we designed the study to be an efficacy trial to look at these two programs and to evaluate the efficacy of them both relative to standard care on behavioral and psychosocial outcomes. So our starting point for this was an existing effective risk reduction program, Abstinence Plus program, called It's Your Game, Keep It Real. And this is a program developed by the same team of researchers at UT. And It's Your Game, Keep It Real is now a nationally recognized evidence-based program. It's recognized by the Office of Adolescent Health in their list of programmings. And I think just as an aside, it's really funny that we heard about Keeping It Real from Miranda. We're going to hear about Get Real in the third presenter. So you're at the really real session this afternoon. So It's Your Game, Keep It Real is a multimedia program. It's delivered in 7th and 8th grade. And in a previous randomized control trial, which has been published, we followed a cohort of youth from 7th grade into 9th grade. And we had positive outcomes in terms of delaying sexual initiation and also reducing risk behavior among sexually active youth. And we also had a positive impact on a lot of psychosocial variables related to sex. So this was our starting point for this study. This was the risk reduction arm of our study, and we developed a parallel sister program that was a risk avoidance or abstinence until marriage program. It's Your Game, Keep It Real, the risk avoidance version. So we used a systematic approach in developing both of these programs. We did a review of existing risk avoidance and risk reduction programs. We wanted to get a sense of what the range of activities in these type of programs, what are some of the key messages in these types of programs. We also had a wonderful expert advisory group, which had experts from both sides of the debate. And we also talked a lot with students and parents about their views to both of these approaches. So what we found were there some very key differences between these two programs. The risk avoidance program clearly takes a directive approach. At the end of every lesson, it tells young people that waiting until they're married to have sex is the best thing for them. It also has a focus on character education, which many risk avoidance programs do. So it emphasized honesty, caring, respect, responsibility, courage, truth, those kind of things. It also had a focus on beliefs about marriage and the benefits of marriage, both for the individual and for a child. And then we developed it so it would be compliant with the Title V A through H criteria. If you're familiar with those are the federal guidelines for an abstinence education program. The risk reduction program was more non-directive. Every lesson did tell young people that waiting till they were older, this is for 7th and 8th graders, waiting till you're older is the best thing for you. but every lesson also encouraged them to set their own personal limits about sex. It had a strong emphasis on respecting yourself and respecting others, which is pretty common in risk reduction programs, especially for this age. And it did contain activities that focus on skills training for condom use and contraceptive use, so making sure that students understood the correct ways to use a condom and to talk with a partner about using a condom. However, there were many common elements to these two programs. Both of them were theory-based, primarily social cognitive theory and the theory of planned behavior and reasoned action. Both of them had heavy emphasis on skills training. So a lot of activities about setting your personal limits around sex, effective refusal skills, effective decision making. They also had a strong focus on healthy friendships, peer friendships, and healthy dating relationships. We've worked with youth in Southeast Texas for a long time. This is an urban inner city school district, and many of our 7th and 8th graders do not understand what a healthy relationship looks like, what a healthy dating relationship looks like. They don't have good role models for that. So this was a key element to the program. Both programs focused on the facts of puberty and reproduction, and we defined sex, what is sex, oral, anal, and vaginal sex. We focused on the negative consequences of sex, STIs, and unintended pregnancy. Each program had parent-child homeworks. We wanted to encourage students to go home and talk to their parents about some of the topics that were being discussed in the class. And then most key, what makes It's Your Game, Keep It Real really innovative, these were multimedia programs. So most of the many of the activities were in the classroom, like role plays, small group discussion, large group discussion. We also did journaling with the youth, so in many of the classes they were able to personalize, what does this issue mean to me, what are my personal limits, what are my risky situations. And then also in each grade level we had a number of computer lessons. So we took laptops in the efficacy trial, we took laptops into the classroom, they had headphones, and the youth were able to work one-on-one through activities that kind of backed up what they learned in the classroom lesson. And this was really key because at the middle school level we could tailor some of these activities by gender and some of them by sexual experience. So we were really able to get messages to the young person kind of where they were at. And then finally, another key point for both of these curricula, they were administered by trained facilitators who believed in their respective program. We know young people, they can see right through you. If you don't believe in the message that you're teaching, they're just going to tune you out. In terms of implementation, both of these programs were implemented in the spring of 7th grade, and then those same 7th graders, when they made it into 8th grade, they received a booster, 12 lessons in 8th grade. The programs were both implemented in PE or in science. And as I said, we took laptops for the efficacy trial. We took laptops with a wireless network into the schools. And that was fun because some of the activities, the students could write their responses to video and things that went on in the program. And those responses were fed to the facilitator's laptop. So she was able to kind of lead discussion based on what students had responded to on the computer. And then finally, it was implemented in schools by pairs of trained facilitators, as I said. So I'm going to turn now to the evaluation. This was a randomized controlled trial. It was conducted in 15 middle schools in a large urban school district in Southeast Texas. And these schools were randomly assigned to one of three conditions. So five schools were randomized to receive the risk reduction program. Five schools were randomly assigned to receive the risk avoidance program. And five schools were assigned to the control condition. And the youth in the control condition had whatever their regular sexual health education was. And unfortunately, in this school district, it's probably 4 to 6 hours within a 6-week period that is their health ed class. And it's very much knowledge-based. And the textbooks for health ed in Texas do not allow you to talk about condoms. So it was pretty much an abstinence, knowledge-based intervention that the control group were getting. We conducted baseline surveys, and then we conducted follow-up at 5, 18, and 24 months post-baseline, and I'm presenting the results from the 24-month follow-up. So these are the final results from whether the programs worked or not in terms of behavioral and psychosocial outcomes. We also did our surveys on laptops using the ACASI approach, which has been shown to help get more honest and reliable answers from young people. They sense that it's more honest and confidential putting their answers into a computer. So this shows you the characteristics of the cohort that we followed. We were able to follow about 1,250 students from 7th grade into 9th grade. And you can see here at baseline, this cohort was about 60% female, 39% African American, 48% Hispanic. And that breakdown is pretty representative of the youth in our school district. As I mentioned, it's a large urban, a low-income school district. The mean age of this cohort at baseline was about 12 and a half years old, and at baseline, about 10% of them said they'd ever had sex. We knew going into this from working in this school district for a long time, this is a very mobile population. So our sample size calculations were based on having 75% retention at ninth grade. So this was, we started in seventh grade and followed them into ninth grade for 24 months. And we were able to achieve that 75% retention. But to give you an idea, we started in 15 middle schools. By ninth grade, we were finding our youth in 86 schools. We started in one school district, and we ended up in multiple school districts. And I really have to credit our field team. We've developed a lot of really effective tracking methods. We use Facebook a lot to track youth. We use internet white pages. We do pop-ups, random pop-ups, home visits to see if the kid's there or if anybody knows when they might be there. Just a lot of methods to track these kids and really try to find them for the follow-up. So the next few slides show you some of the results from the ninth grade follow-up. And we use multi-level modeling. This was a nested study design, so we use multi-level modeling. What you're looking at here are the results for looking at the impact on sexual initiation. So we use multivariate logistic regression analyses. These are adjusted odds ratios, and they're adjusted for gender, race, ethnicity, age, family structure, time between measures, and school level sexual experience at baseline. And these, because we wanted to look at the impact of the program just on youth who are sexually inexperienced, who are virgins at baseline, these analyses exclude any youth who had any type of sex at baseline. So this just is looking at the impact on delaying sexual initiation. So here you have the impact for the risk reduction arm of the study versus the control group, and the risk avoidance arm versus the control group. And the ones that are highlighted in gray are the statistically significant outcomes. So this is in the overall sample, the 1,200 or so kids that we followed. And this is between risk reduction and control. Our primary outcome was delaying any type of sexual initiation, so whether they had had anal, oral, or vaginal sex by ninth grade. And you can see for the risk reduction program, we had a positive impact. Less students who had the risk reduction program had initiated any type of sex by ninth grade compared to the control group. We also had a positive impact on delaying vaginal sex initiation. You can see over here for the risk avoidance arm versus the control group, although these ORs are all in the positive direction in terms of being delaying, we didn't achieve statistical significance in the overall sample. But what gets more interesting is when you look at it by subgroups. And remember I said we wanted to kind of see how do these key messages resonate with different subgroups of youth. So when you look at the risk reduction arm versus the control group, you see for any sex, delaying any type of sex, we had a positive impact among African-American students, a significant impact among African-American students, and a significant impact among females. For delaying oral sex, we also had a significant impact among females, and for delaying vaginal sex, a positive impact between African-American and female students. In the risk avoidance arm, we did see a significant delay among the Hispanic students in our sample. Those youth that got the risk avoidance program were less likely, 60% less likely, to have initiated any type of sex than Hispanic students in the control group. Female students were less likely to have initiated oral sex. And again, Latino students, Hispanic students, were less likely to have initiated vaginal sex. So there was a positive impact among Hispanics and females. Unfortunately, we did see an adverse impact here among males. And males who received the risk avoidance program were more likely to report having had oral sex at ninth grade than people in the control group. We also looked at both programs' impact on other sexual behaviors. So here again, if we look at the risk reduction program versus the control group, we had a significant impact in terms of reducing the frequency of sex in the last few months, both for vaginal and for anal sex. We also had a significant impact on reducing the frequency of unprotected sex in the last 3 months, and we had a significant impact on reducing unprotected sex at last intercourse. For the risk avoidance group, we also had an impact, and this was important to us. Many previous studies of risk avoidance programs have shown negative impacts on condom use. So we here did show a positive impact on reducing unprotected sex at last intercourse. However, we did have an adverse outcome. Youth who received the risk avoidance program were more likely to have had more partners in the last 3 months than in the control group. And then finally, in the interest of time, we followed 23 psychosocial variables from 7th grade to 9th grade. I'm only going to show you some of them. But in both arms in 9th grade, we had a sustained impact on about 7 out of 23 of those. So about a third of the psychosocial variables that we measured, we had a sustained impact into 9th grade. And this is about 9 to 12 months after the intervention finished. So that's fairly significant. In the risk reduction arm, we had a positive impact on increasing condom knowledge. We also had a positive impact, a significant impact on increasing their beliefs about abstinence, the benefits of waiting. They also were more likely to report more reasons not to have sex than people in the control group. And they also had greater condom use self-advocacy than youth in the control group. In the risk avoidance arm, we had sustained impact on HIV-STI knowledge, on increased beliefs about abstinence, more reasons not to have sex. They also thought that their friends were more likely to think waiting was a good thing, and they also had greater condom use self-efficacy than youth in the control group. Also, I don't have here intentions to use a condom if they were going to have sex, also was significant for both arms of the study, so for the risk avoidance group too. So again, we were happy to see that the program, this is a theory-based, carefully crafted, any information about condoms in the risk avoidance program was medically accurate. We took pains not to denigrate condoms in any way, although there wasn't a focus on the skills training. So this was a program that did seem to at least have a positive impact, or not a negative impact on youth's views about condoms. Obviously, these data need to be looked at with some limitations in mind. All the data were self-reported, so there's always the issue of maybe under-reporting or over-reporting of sexual behavior. We did require parental consent to take part in the study, so probably maybe some kids that may be at riskier, engaging in riskier sexual behaviors or substance use may not have been involved in the study. This was restricted to one school district. However, it is the seventh largest school district in the country, so we hope that these findings might generalize to other large urban school districts. And finally, we did run multiple comparisons without an adjustment, so it's possible that some of these outcomes may be due to chance. However, in summary, we would say that these results are really encouraging. For the risk reduction arm of It's Your Game, this is the second randomized control trial that's shown positive impact on delaying sex and reducing risky behavior among sexually experienced kids. So it shows yet again that a program in middle school that talks about abstinence but also talks about condoms can have positive impacts among youth. We also found that the risk avoidance program had a positive impact among Latino and female students, although there were mixed impacts for male and sexually experienced students. And we work in Texas. Many school districts in Texas want, and their community wants, to have a risk avoidance program. So we would argue we want to have an evidence-based program that they could choose from, one that doesn't do maybe possibly more harm than good. We also were excited that both programs had a positive impact on psychosocial outcomes. So in summary, we would say this study adds to a small but growing body of literature that shows that middle school interventions can be successful. We're going to hear more about another middle school program in a minute, and I'm very excited to hear your results. So we are really, in Houston, we're really encouraging school districts across Texas to look at the middle school level and to implement evidence-based programs in middle schools to help young people make healthy, responsible decisions about their sexual behavior. And if you're interested in any of these findings, we do have these results that I've presented. This outcome paper is in press right now with the Journal of Adolescent Health, and we hope it'll be coming out in the next few months. So thank you very much.